Chapter 21.
"Well," Richard Gordon said to his wife. "You have lipstick on your shirt," she said, "and over your ear."
"What about this?"
"What about what?
What about finding you lying on the couch with that drunken slob?"
"You did not."
"Where did I find you?"
"You found us sitting on the couch."
"In the dark?"
"Where have you been?"
"At the Bradleys."
"Yes," she said, "I know. Don't come near me. You reek of that woman."
"What do you reek of?"
"Nothing. I've been sitting talking to a friend."
"Did you kiss him?"
"No."
"Did he kiss you?"
"Yes, I liked it."
"You bitch.
If you call me that, I'll leave you."
"You bitch."
"All right," she said. "It's over. If you weren't so conceited and I weren't so good to you, you'd have seen it was over a long time ago."
"You bitch."
"No," she said, "I'm not a bitch. I've tried to be a good wife, but you're as selfish and conceited as a barnyard rooster. Always crowing, 'Look what I've done, look how I've made you happy. Now run along and cackle.' Well, you don't make me happy, and I'm sick of you. I'm through cackling."
"You shouldn't cackle. You never produced anything to cackle about."
"Whose fault was that? Didn't I want children? But we never could afford them. But we could afford to go to the Cap d'Antibes to swim and to Switzerland to ski. We can afford to come down here to Key West. I'm sick of you. I dislike you. This Bradley woman today was the last straw."
"Oh, leave her out of it."
"You coming home with lipstick all over you? Couldn't you even wash? There's some on your forehead, too."
"You kissed that drunken twerp?"
"No, I didn't, but I would have if I'd known what you were doing."
"Why did you let him kiss you?"
"I was furious at you. We waited and waited and waited. You never came near me. You went off with that woman and stayed for hours. John brought me home."
"Oh, John, is it?"
"Yes, John. John. John."
"And what's his last name, Thomas?"
"His name is McWalsey."
"Why don't you spell it?"
"I can't," she said, and laughed. But it was the last time she laughed. "Don't think it's all right because I laugh," she said, tears in her eyes, her lips working. "It's not all right. This isn't just an ordinary row. It's over. I don't hate you. It isn't violent. I just dislike you. I dislike you thoroughly, and I'm through with you."
"All right," he said.
"No, not all right. All over. Don't you understand?"
"I guess so."
"Don't guess.
Don't be so melodramatic, Helen."
"So I'm melodramatic, am I? Well, I'm not. I'm through with you."
"No, you're not."
"I won't say it again."
"What are you going to do?"
"I don't know yet. I may marry John McWalsey."
"You will not."
"I will if I wish."
"He wouldn't marry you?"
"Oh, yes, he will. He asked me to marry him this afternoon."
Richard Gordon said nothing. A hollow had come in him where his heart had been, and everything he heard or said seemed to be overheard.
"He asked you what?" he said, his voice coming from a long way away.
"To marry him."
"Why?"
"Because he loves me. Because he wants me to live with him. He makes enough money to support me."
"You're married to me."
"Not really. Not in the church.
You wouldn't marry me in the church, and it broke my poor mother's heart, as you well know.
I was so sentimental about you, I'd break anyone's heart for you. My, I was a damned fool. I broke my own heart, too. It's broken and gone. Everything I believed in, and everything I cared about, I left for you because you were so wonderful. And you loved me so much that love was all that mattered. Love was the greatest thing, wasn't it? Love was what we had that no one else had or could ever have. And you were a genius, and I was your whole life. I was your partner and your little black flower. Slop. Love is just another dirty lie. Love is ergo apio pills to make me come around because you were afraid to have a baby. Love is quinine and quinine and quinine until I'm deaf with it. Love is that dirty aborting horror that you took me to. Love is my insides all messed up. It's half catheters and half whirling douches.
I know about love. Love always hangs up behind the bathroom door. It smells like Lysol. To hell with love. Love is you making me happy and then going off to sleep with your mouth open while I lie awake all night afraid to say my prayers even because I know I have no right to anymore. Love is all the dirty little tricks you taught me that you probably got out of some book. All right. I'm through with you, and I'm through with love. Your kind of pick-nose love. You writer.
You little mixed slut.
Don't call me names. I know the word for you.
All right.
No, not all right. All wrong and wrong again. If you were just a good writer, I could stand for all the rest of it, maybe. But I've seen you bitter, jealous, changing your politics to suit the fashion, sucking up to people's faces and talking about them behind their backs. I've seen you until I'm sick of you. In that dirty rich bitch of a Bradley woman today. Oh, I'm sick of it. I've tried to take care of you and humor you and look after you and cook for you and keep quiet when you wanted and cheerful when you wanted and give you your little explosions and pretend it made me happy and put up with your rages and jealousies and your meannesses. And now I'm through.
So now you want to start again with a drunken professor?
He's a man. He's kind and he's charitable and he makes you feel comfortable and we come from the same thing and we have values that you'll never have. He's like my father was.
He's a drunk.
He drinks and so did my father. And my father wore wool socks and put his feet in them up on a chair and read the paper in the evening. And when we had croup, he took care of us. He was a boilermaker and his hands were all broken and he liked to fight when he drank and he could fight when he was sober. He went to mass because my mother wanted him to and he did his Easter duty for her and for our Lord, but mostly for her. And he was a good union man and if he ever went with another woman, she never knew it.
I'll bet he went with plenty.
Maybe he did. But if he did, he told the priest, not her. And if he did, it was because he couldn't help it and he was sorry and repented of it. He didn't do it out of curiosity or from barnyard pride or to tell his wife what a great man he was. If he did, it was because my mother was away with us kids for the summer and he was out with the boys and got drunk. He was a man.
You ought to be a writer and write about him. I'd be a better writer than you.
And John McWalsey is a good man. That's what you're not. You couldn't be. No matter what your politics or your religion.
I haven't any religion.
Neither have I. But I had one once and I'm going to have one again. And you won't be there to take it away like you've taken away everything else.
No.
No. You can be in bed with some rich woman like Helene Bradley. How did she like you? Did she think you were wonderful?
Looking at her sad, angry face, pretty with crying, the lips swollen freshly like something after rain, her curly dark hair wild about her face, Richard Gordon gave her up. Then finally, "And you don't love me anymore?" "I hate the word, even."
"All right," he said, and slapped her hard and suddenly across the face. She cried now from actual pain, not anger, her face down on the table.
"You didn't need to do that," she said.
"Oh, yes, I did," he said. "You know an awful lot, but you don't know how much I needed to do that."
That afternoon, she had not seen him as the door opened. She had not seen anything but the white ceiling with its cake frosting modeling of cupids, doves, and scroll work that the light from the open door suddenly made clear. Richard Gordon had turned his head and seen him, standing heavy and bearded in the doorway.
"Don't stop," Helene had said. "Please don't stop." Her bright hair was spread over the pillow.
But Richard Gordon had stopped, and his head was still turned, staring.
"Don't mind him. Don't mind anything. Don't you see you can't stop now?" the woman had said in desperate urgency.
The bearded man had closed the door softly. He was smiling.
"What's the matter, darling?"
Helene Bradley had asked, now in the darkness again.
"I must go." "Don't you see you can't go?"
"That man."
"That's only Tommy," Helene had said. "He knows all about these things. Don't mind him. Come on, darling.
Please do.
I can't.
You must, Helene had said. He could feel her shaking and her head on his shoulder was trembling.
My God, don't you know anything? Haven't you any regard for a woman?
I have to go, said Richard Gordon.
In the darkness, he had felt the slap across his face that lighted flashes of light in his eyeballs. Then there was another slap, across his mouth this time.
So that's the kind of man you are, she had said to him. I thought you were a man of the world. Get out of here.
That was this afternoon. That was how it had finished at the Bradleys.
Now his wife sat with her head forward on her hands that rested on the table, and neither of them said anything. Richard Gordon could hear the clock ticking, and he felt as hollow as the room was quiet. After a while, his wife said without looking at him,
I'm sorry it happened, but you see it's over, don't you?
Yes, if that's the way it's been.
It hasn't been all like that, but for a long time it's been that way.
I'm sorry I slapped you.
Oh, that's nothing. That hasn't anything to do with it. That was just a way to say goodbye.
Don't.
I'll have to get out, she said very tiredly. I'll have to take the big suitcase, I'm afraid.
Do it in the morning, he said. You can do everything in the morning.
I'd rather do it now, Dick, and it would be easier. But I'm so tired. It's made me awfully tired and given me a headache.
You do whatever you want.
Oh, God, she said. I wish it wouldn't have happened. But it's happened. I'll try to fix everything up for you. You'll need somebody to look after you. If I hadn't have said some of that, or if you hadn't hit me, maybe we could have fixed it up again.
No, it was over before that.
I'm so sorry for you, Dick.
Don't you be sorry for me or I'll slap you again.
I guess I'd feel better if you slapped me, she said. I am sorry for you. Oh, I am.
Go to hell.
I'm sorry I said it about you not being good in bed. I don't know anything about that. I guess you're wonderful.
You're not such a star, he said. She began to cry again.
That's worse than slapping, she said.
Well, what did you say?
I don't know. I don't remember. I was so angry and you hurt me so.
Well, it's all over, so why be bitter?
Oh, I don't want it to be over. But it is, and there's nothing to do now.
You'll have your rummy professor.
Don't, she said. Can't we just shut up and not talk anymore?
Yes.
Will you?
Yes.
I'll sleep out here.
No, you can have the bed. You must. I'm going out for a while.
Oh, don't go out.
I've got to, he said.
Goodbye, she said.
And he saw her face he always loved so much, that crying never spoiled, and her curly black hair, her small firm breasts under the sweater forward against the edge of the table. And he didn't see the rest of her that he'd loved so much and thought he had pleased but evidently hadn't been any good to that was all below the table. And as he went out the door, she was looking at him across the table, and her chin was on her hands, and she was crying.